Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome. It's a brand new year. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader. That's Tim Dennis. This is still Beyond the Darkness, Tim. We didn't change anything. It's just a new year.
Yeah, just a new year. Yeah.
Well, we didn't change anything yet.
No.
Ooh. You like that, Tim?
I like that.
I'm leaving a little bait out there.
Yeah.
What's he mean by that? What kind of shenanigans might be up? Oh, you're going to find out. I don't know why my voice did that. Oh, you're going to find out.
Why'd you do Mickey Mouse there? What was up with that?
Yeah. Oh, big changes coming. Yeah, we've got some cool stuff that we're working on. Big news coming this month. Just keep following darknessradio.com and our social media. As a matter of fact, I encourage all of you to start following Dr. Tim Dennis. Yes, Dr. Tim Dennis.
Yep, I've got my doctorate.
On the Twitter.
On the Twitter, yeah.
That way you can keep up with what we're doing. I know many of you follow me already. If you don't, at Darkness Radio for Twitter, you'll find us on Facebook. You know what? As a matter of fact, if you just go to darknessradio.com, look around. You're going to find information on both of us and how you can communicate with us, how you can reach out to us, where you can see us, Tim's home address.
No, that's not on there.
I put that on. That way, what? I don't have to try to repeat it. Well, you told me not to say it on the air. I didn't know. But I couldn't put it on the website.
I didn't tell you to put it on the website.
No, I know, but you didn't tell me not to. You just said don't give it out on the air. I thought that would make it easier.
Oh,
no?
That doesn't mean put it on the website.
Oh, unbelievable.
Oh, jeez.
Well, it's out there, folks. I'm sorry. I guess now you know how to get in touch with Tim.
No, take it down.
P.O. Box 22321, Eagan, Minnesota, 55122. That's the address, P.O. Box 22321, Eagan, Minnesota, 55122, because there are some of you still living in caves who refuse to use electronic devices to communicate with us and keep asking, where can we mail things to you and Tim? That is the address, P.O. Box 22321, 22321, Eagan, that's E-A-G-A-N, Minnesota, 55122. That is our address for you to send kind gifts, McDonald's coupons for McRibs that we don't get in our state, boxes of bizarre Twinkies that are found around the country, perhaps around the world. Naked pictures of yourself, gentlemen, for Tim. Just send them right to us. Tim Dennis, P.O. Box 22321.
No, that's okay.
Eagan, Minnesota. Why, Tim? I thought you love art. You love photography. I figure this would be the perfect medium for you to get.
Well.
No? Not so much?
Not so much.
Wow, you are a hard man to please.
I am.
Am I right, ladies? He's a hard man to please. Let's get into today's show, Tim.
Okay.
Shall we?
Sure.
We're going to talk a little alien legacy. Based on a very true event, our guest for today, Geraldine Sutton Stith. Geraldine, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you stop by. And, I'm always looking for interesting topics, and I know that we've talked about this in other episodes throughout the years, but what really intrigues me is that you have a direct tie to the story we're going to cover today, right?
Yes, most definitely, yes.
The Kelly Green Men Alien Legacy Revisited, for those of you unfamiliar with the Kelly Hopkinsville UFO and alien shootout story, the Green Goblin attack. This is a story unlike any others. Now, talk to me. This was 1955, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Talk to me prior to that date. What can you tell me about that area and the people that live there?
All right. 1955, think of Mayberry, I guess you could say.
Sure.
Small community out in the middle of nowhere, basically. It's a farming community. Back then, there may have been a population of 50, and that was it. Sparse farming families all around. My family, of course, it was my grandmother, and she was a widow at the time, and she had three small children, which were 12, 10, and 7. And my Uncle J.C. and Aunt Eileen stayed with her and helped her because she had a small farm. I guess you could say it was 20, 27 acres, something like that. And after her husband died, they came in to help her. But like I said, small farming community. Everybody knew everybody, several churches. And that's just how it was back then. They had electricity, but no plumbing. They had a radio for communication. So, you know, they didn't know a whole lot back then.
Is that area, I mean, was it, you say very Mayberry. So it was just very rural, friendly, doors open on the, you know, in your homes and neighbors still caring about neighbors and watching out for one another. Is that a pretty safe assessment then?
Exactly. That's exactly how it was. Everybody knew everybody. You know, Sunday afternoon meals, you know, that kind of thing, get-togethers, you know, church get-togethers. And it was that type of atmosphere back then because that's all they knew. They don't have what we have today, you know, so that's right, how it was back then.
Beautiful time. Yet. Now, do you know, I mean, having spoken to your family prior to this incident, did they ever even think about UFOs or aliens, or were there, you know, stories in and around that area preceding this strange encounter?
Oh, goodness, no, because this poor community, for one, they didn't go to the movies all the time. In fact, there's, I think, one movie theater in Hopkinsville, which was down the road from Kelly, like 7 or 8 miles. And, you know, they didn't go there all the time to go to movies and stuff. They couldn't afford to. So they didn't know about these things. They didn't have a television. All they had was their radio. So, you know, they did not know about these things.
All right. Now, this encounter, which is truly one of the most bizarre and unusual stories, before we get totally into it, do we know how many witnesses there are completely to this story?
Yes, there was 11 in the house that night.
11. Okay.
11 people. Okay, you had my grandmother, of course, with three kids, my Uncle J.C. and Aunt Eileen. O.P. Baker, which was Eileen's brother, would stay there sometimes with them. Then what happened was my dad and his wife at the time, Vera, and his friends, Billy Ray and June Taylor, came in that weekend. They worked with a carnival. They were stationed in Evansville, which was a couple hours down the road. And so they decided to come in for that weekend, you know, to get away from all the carnival mess and have some good home cooking and clean air. And so there were 11 people actually in the house that night when this occurred.
11 people. All right. So this isn't 11. Just one or two off. Not Uncle Ray was out drinking moonshine and stumbling on his way home from the saloon and he saw a weird light in the sky. This was well documented by many people.
Yes. Many people seen lights during the day that day, things they couldn't explain. There were things seen that night. And this all came forward after the fact, you know, after they came forward with what happened to them. All this came forward later.
Okay. Well, now, you said that lights were seen in the sky. Let's back it up before we get into the main gist of the story. I'm curious to find out, where were lights seen and by who?
Okay, let me explain how this works. Kelly is 7 to 8 miles from Hopkinsville. Up from Hopkinsville, you have Fort Campbell. Fort Campbell is an Army base, and it's probably 15 miles from Hopkinsville. So you got to understand, with an Army base being there, I think a lot of people just stuck it in their mind, the lights they were seeing was something to do with them, even back in 1955. And so what happened was, down from Fort Campbell, you have Clarksville. Lights were being seen starting at Clarksville. They were coming across Clarksville. They came across Fort Campbell. They hit Hopkinsville, and they came across Kelly. And people were seeing these lights during the day, and especially that night when this occurred. So lights that couldn't be explained were being seen, but people were, like, throwing it to the side and thinking, well, you know, Fort Campbell.
Okay, so they're just assessing that it must be something military.
Exactly.
Now, had that kind of stuff happened before where, you know, they were doing military excursions and exercises and it would be witnessed by large crowds?
I'm sure it had, and that's probably why people were ignoring it for the most part, because you have that around an Army base. So,
there something different, though, about this?
There was. It, you know, a lot of people couldn't explain it because they did think it was a different type of light than what they had seen before. Especially the ones that were seen at my family's farmhouse. You know, the person that first seen the craft knew that it was different, knew he couldn't explain what it could have been. And during the day that day, there were other people that seen something that they really, really couldn't explain. It was different, but it wasn't bothering them. You know, it was going across the sky, so they really didn't think no more of it.
All right. Well, let's start to put ourselves into the story. This happens on August 21st, 1955, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Walk us through the day for your family. What had been going on that day? What were they up to?
Well, like I said, my dad and them came in. They had came in, I think, on that Friday evening or Saturday. I can't remember. But so they had a good weekend visiting his other brothers who lived in Hopkinsville. You know, family stuff all the way around. And so Sunday got there, the day of the event, or night of the event. And, of course, my grandmother was really religious. So, of course, she gets the kids up Sunday morning, goes to church. That's the thing to do. My dad and then went and visited my other uncles, and they had their own day. You know, they were hunting, enjoying the weekend. Sunday evening fell, and they knew they were going to have to go back to Evansville to go back to work. So they kind of just sat around and enjoyed a quiet evening. They were playing cards. Kids were playing the regular thing that they do when you don't have nothing else to do. And it was hot, dry August that year. And they didn't have running water. So Billy Ray said, I'm going to go out to the well and get some cool water. So he heads on out there. And as he's out there dipping his water out, he hears something, looks up toward the sky. And lo and behold, there's this silver oval-shaped object with what he says, the colors of the rainbow floating behind it. Well, he was smart enough to know this didn't look your normal aircraft. So he drops his water, runs in the house, slams the door behind him, and tells everybody there is something out here. Well, you got to understand, these were all young people in their 20s. Billy Ray's wife was 18 or 19. So the first thing my dad is thinking, Billy Ray went out there, thought up this convoluted story and is trying to scare the girls. So they tell him to calm down, be quiet. There's nothing out there. He kept on. My dad says, all right, take me out there. Show me where this object was. So they head out to the well. He points up toward the sky, tells him all over again what it looked like and everything. My dad
now,
was he
frightened, would you say? Was he just
Billy
perplexed?
Ray?
Yeah, was he perplexed?
Oh, he was frightened.
Okay.
He was frightened. And my dad tells him there's there's nothing out here. Maybe it was a shooting star. Billy Ray says, I know what a shooting star looks like, and that was not a shooting star. Well, maybe it was a meteor shower, because they had been having meteor showers that month there.
Okay,
and
sure.
He's like, no, I know what those look like. It wasn't that. And he says, well, there's nothing out here now. Let's go back in the house, settle down, finish up our last evening here. And, you know, so they head back to the house as they're walking toward the house. Lo and behold, back behind there in the woods comes this little three and a half foot tall being, huge head, huge ears, glowing eyes, arms almost touching the ground, seeming to float above the ground. All right, now you got two grown men seeing
right.
them, so they both run in the house, slam the door behind them, tell everybody there is something out here. We don't know what it is, but there's something out here. Of course, they're laughing at them, because they're thinking, all right, Billy Ray done got lucky, which lucky was my dad's nickname. Done got lucky out there to go along with his little scheme. And so my grandmother tells them, said, boys, y'all need to calm it down. I've got to get these kids to bed, and you're not helping me any. And they kept on and kept on. Well, my grandmother knew something was really serious when one grabbed a rifle. One grabbed a shotgun, one went to the back door, one went to the front door and sat.
Oh, things are getting serious.
She got to thinking about this. Okay, right. I'll go talk to Billy Ray. I can get more out of Billy Ray than I can Elmer. So she goes, sets at the back door. Billy Ray squats down there beside him. Billy Ray, what did you see? He said, Miss Glennie, says, I don't know what that was, but I hope it's something that you'll never have to see. And so they sit there in quiet, and it's really quiet. They can hear them in the house playing and carrying on. And all of a sudden, lo and behold, around the corner of the house where they sat, here comes a little three and a half foot tall being. My grandmother screams, falls to the floor. Everybody comes running. She says, there is something out here. I just saw it. About that time, a shot rings out in the front of the house. All of them take off running. My Uncle JC shot one through the window. About that
He shot one through the window. He took a shot out the window, or there was an alien standing at the window?
It was standing outside. He shot through the screen.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So anyway, Billy Ray, I guess, gets his big pants on by then, takes running off out the front door, standing under stoop, looking for this little being. About that time, this clawed hand reaches down, seeming to grab his hair. My Aunt Eileen grabs him and pulls him back into the house. My dad runs out then, looks up toward the roof, and shoots the little sucker. He hits it. I mean, these are country boys. They learn how to shoot by the time they're just about walking.
Right.
So he hits the thing. It rolls, jumps up, seems to float off. About that time, somebody screams, there's one in the oak tree up front, because they had these huge oak trees in the front yard. Sure enough, he turns around, there's one sitting on a branch. He shoots it, floats to the ground, rolls, jumps up, goes away. Well, they're shooting them everywhere by now. They shot one off the back fence. I mean, there's shooting going on. You've even got this neighbor.
Hold on one second.
Go
ahead. When they're shooting them, what's happening? Do the bullets seem to be affecting these creatures?
No, and that's the part that's scary, and that's what's, you know, frightening everyone, because they're shooting these things. They're getting up, coming back. They're rolling and getting up. I mean, they're not dying. They're not laying there convulsing and dying. They're getting up and going. So, lo and behold, there's a neighbor that's hearing all this gunshot going on, and he's thinking, you know, let me back up. I got ahead of myself. He's hearing a commotion going on first, and he's thinking, well, some of the animals had gotten out. So he starts getting his boots on and getting his lantern together. He's going to go help them, because he's thinking, well, you know, they need some help. By the time he's stepping out the door, that's when he hears the gunfire. And he's like, nope, going back in. Can't do this. I don't want to get shot in the dark. So he goes back in and doesn't go. And so they're shooting these things, and everybody's scared. The kids are crying. June is just about to go out of her head. And my dad's like, just listen. says, we're going to get help as soon as we can. We're going to get in the vehicles, run to Hopkinsville and get help. He said, just hold on. So he quietens everyone down, and they're sitting there in the house, and it's just eerie quiet. All of a sudden, they hear one of them going across the tin roof. They can hear its little nails. Well, this really sends everybody into hysterics. June is about to scream her lungs out. Everybody's crying, and he's like, just hold on, calm down. We're going to get out of this. And so they wait a little while longer, and it's silence again. So he tells them, let's go. So they go out and hit the trucks. Here you got 11 people from the age of 50 to 7 running into Hopkinsville in the middle of the night to the sheriff's office. They run in there, one little officer on duty. Of course, this is 1955. They didn't need a bunch. So here they are trying to tell this poor little officer what just happened. He's trying to understand. He's like, what do you mean you've got little men attacking your farm? And my dad is like, no, you're not understanding what we're trying to tell you here. And so they're trying. And so he says, hold on, I'm going to call the chief. So he calls Chief Russell Greenwell. The chief tells him, keep them there. Call Fort Campbell. Call the paper. Call everybody you can. We're going to get some people out here. Because the chief kind of understood what was going on here because he had had his own experience a few years before that.
Oh, really?
So he kind of thought, oh, yeah. So anyway, he gets there, him and his wife goes with him. They get there to the station. He tells, my family, it's going to be all right. We're going to go out here. We're going to figure this out. So here you got this little caravan of cars, trucks. You got Fort Campbell office, military. You got everything going out there. They get there. It's an eerie quiet. You can tell something happened. You've got shotgun and rifle shells all over the place, inside the house and out. The only problem is there's no bodies. There's no blood. There's nothing that shows that a body was hit. Holes through the screens, woodwork shot up on the house. Clear, something happened here. And even when they were driving up to the house, some of the officers in one of the cars saw a glowing substance on the back fence where they had shot one. So they walked back there to see what it was. And as they walked up, the glow would stop. So, okay. They look, they search. My family wouldn't go in the house until they searched every inch of everything that was on this land, buildings, everything searched. Finally, the chief told my grandmother, said, well, we can't find anything. There's nothing here. And
now,
he says, I'm sorry,
but
there's...
Geraldine, what your family, before they made this run, are they talking amongst each other? People are going to think we're nuts. Were they worried about how they might be perceived?
I don't think so at the time.
Okay.
Because they were too scared. I mean, you got to think, even today, if you're sitting in your home, minding your own business, all of a sudden you got these little creatures that you don't know what the heck they are coming up to your windows and doors. So they didn't have air conditioning, so they had their windows up, doors open. No screens on them, but still, these things were coming up to their windows and doors, peeking in. You don't know what they are. What do you do? Well, these being country boys, they're going to do the first thing they know to do, and that's shoot now, ask questions later. My grandmother tried to get my dad to stop shooting at them because she felt maybe there was something wrong, that they needed help, because they didn't have any weapons on them. They weren't trying to shoot back. They had their little hands up in the air like they were trying to surrender or something. So in my grandmother's mind, and the kind-hearted person she was, I think she'd have let Bigfoot in the house if he thought, he was in trouble. But she just thought that maybe something else was happening. But he wouldn't listen. The only thing he was thinking was, hey, I've got my little brothers and sister here. I got my mama here. I got my wife here. I'm going to protect them. That was his mentality.
Understandable. And how many, in total, how many different beings do they think that they saw that night?
Well, my dad always said that he thought there were three or four because it was the same ones he felt coming back. I know if you read some of the tales, they say 11 or 12, but it wasn't. He said it was three or four of them. They just kept getting up and coming back. And so anyway, you know, the chief said, I'm sorry, we can't do nothing. So everybody left. So here they were back by themselves. My grandmother got everybody settled down, got the kids in bed. They were exhausted, mentally, physically exhausted. My grandmother laid down. My dad got beside her in the rocking chair with a rifle across his lap and sat there. And so my grandmother was so tired, she opened her eyes, and lo and behold, she thought she'd seen one at the window again. She thought, well, maybe it was exhaustion. So she closed her eyes again, opened them up. Well, it was still there. The third time she opened her eyes, she yelled at my dad, they're back. So he gets up. Gunfire starts again, and they keep this up until daylight breaks. And the only thing they can figure is when the sun came up, it hurt their eyes because they did notice that if they, turned a light on or shone a light their way, they'd back up. And so they thought, well, maybe the sunlight is what saved them because they were running out of ammo.
Now, how big did you say these creatures were?
They were 3.5 feet tall.
3 to 3.5 feet tall. Were they clothed in anything?
No, they were gray. Well, they call it gunmetal gray, but gray. And it was just one solid, body. They did notice that when they hit them, it sounded like hitting a tin bucket. They did notice that.
Okay. Now, would they, was there, and I don't mean to sound crass, but did they notice any genitalia, anything that would show them the sexuality? So no. Okay.
No.
And would they make any sound?
You gotta think too. You're not going to be paying attention to that kind of thing when you've got some little being coming
after you. Speak for yourself. Tim and I are always looking for that kind of stuff.
Oh, well, that figures.
we got to know where we stack up in the evolutionary trade here. Take our jobs and our women, we got to know what we're up against, Geraldine.
I can understand that. But back in 1955, I don't think they were caring. Today we might care, but back then they didn't care.
That's funny. All right. So did they notice that these beings, would they emit any noises at all?
No, they didn't make any noise. They were just very quiet. And, I don't know. I want to say docile, but I don't know if they were docile or not. They don't know what they were wanting. That was the big thing. What were these things? What were they wanting? After it was over with and done, of course, the next morning, my dad got the family together and he sat them down and he told them, he said, listen, he said, do not talk about this. Forget it. Because he noticed the night before when all those people were walking the land, they were laughing. They were giggling. They were carrying on about the little green men and my dad knew right then and there it wasn't going to be a good thing. So he told him, he said, let it be. In fact, him and somebody else ran to Evansville that morning to get some furniture or something. They didn't leave right away after this. And people were coming. I mean, they were coming. They were camping out in the yard wanting to see the aliens, wanting them to come back. And walking through their house and taking souvenirs and taking stuff out of the yard. And it was really bad for a while.
So isn't it funny that they'll laugh and roll their eyes about it, but yet they were trying to take souvenirs.
Exactly.
All right. Hold tight 1 second. Tim, this may be a bad story, right? You got to live through something like this.
Sure.
Knowing people are going to scoff at you, pick at you.
Yep.
Do you come forward? Do you share what your experience is? In that case, maybe it's tough, but in this case, it's not, Tim. There's something I've seen that I want to share with everybody.
What's that?
How do you like that transition? Pretty good, huh?
Pretty good, yeah.
You can binge watch the CBS show Evil. Why, you're going to ask?
Why?
Yeah. Oh, very good. See, Tim, you're supposed to feed me that line a little quicker. Let's try it again. You can binge the CBS show Evil. Why, you may ask?
Well, why, Dave?
Because Evil is a seriously good show. It's a great mystery. And there are moments that will jump you out of your seat episode after episode, you're going to try to put all these puzzle pieces together to see the bigger picture, the big demon riddled, scary picture. Katja Herbers plays Kristen Bouchard, a forensic psychologist who's hired by a priest in training played by Mike Coulter. Together with Asif Manvi, they investigate the Catholic Church's backlog of unexplained mysteries. This is a show that's been, you know, I think we've all been waiting for this style show for a long time. And I'm not kidding you guys. I really love this show. I think you're going to love it, too. They've got things like miracles, possession, hauntings, you know, just about anything in between. And the deeper they get, the more they figure out, the angrier it's making the dark side. Michael Emerson is the quintessential villain. And unlike most shows where they're always hiding kind of in the background, you know, pulling all these strings, or you have to wonder who the villain is throughout the season, it's never a hidden case. And that's what makes him even more evil. It's a rival psychologist who just enjoys creating some really nasty and creepy situations. And as I said, he's not in the shadows. They know exactly who's messing with them. And every episode gets them closer to finding out why. So curl up on your sofa, binge this chilling mystery on CBS All Access, CBS.com, on demand. This series is definitely worth your time. I wouldn't steer you wrong. Check it out for yourself. Evil on CBS All Access, CBS.com, or on demand. You'll thank me for watching. All right, Geraldine, we're talking about your family's case, the Kelly Hopkinsville encounter, the case of Little Green Men, or the Goblin case. At the time, were they, I guess, what was the perception of what it was that they were dealing with? Did they believe that these were aliens? Did they think they were goblins or monsters? I mean, what was the 1950 perception of these beings?
Well, at first, goblins, because my grandmother being religious, that's the first thing she thought. It was something the devil had brought forth. She thought, oh, my God, you know, what have I done wrong, you know, and goblins. And they later became the aliens because people came forward, you know, about the lights, the sounds, all the stuff that was going on, you know, that night. Because lights had been seen by police officers, other people living around. You know, it was just a matter of time before the alien got stuck to it and the green men thing. So that's where the green men came from. You hear that, the green men. Well, that's where it came from. It came from the aliens from Kelly. Because a reporter... Kelly being Kelly, Kelly Green, it just went together. So Kelly Green Man. So that's where you actually get that at. If anybody ever asked you, it came from Kelly.
But, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. See, there's your little history there.
So, all right. Now that they've gone public with this, how about the newspapers? How are they treating your family regarding these claims? Are they reporting it with tongue in cheek? Are they throwing accusations towards your family for possibly being drunk or disorderly or what's the general take at that time?
It's a little bit of everything. I'm pretty sure I've got every newspaper clipping from back then. And if you read over them, yeah, they make fun of it. Yeah, they bring up alcohol and the whole thing. But their land was searched that night. You know, you can look up the police report, and there was no alcohol found. And this is my grandmother. She was highly religious. She wasn't going to let any alcohol around her kids. You know, if the guys wanted to drink, they'd have to have left, you know, the farm. She wasn't going to let them do it there. So, no, there was none of that going on that night. But, yes, it was bad. It was really bad. And that was a big thing about my dad, because he was one of these people that did not like being made fun of, did not like being ridiculed, and that was his fear. And that's why he told them to just let it be, don't talk about it anymore. But, of course, that wasn't going to happen because magazines, papers, everything that could possibly come forward was coming up trying to get them to talk to them and interview them and all this stuff, and they just wanted to be left alone. But that wasn't going to happen. My grandmother, she was so scared after my dad and them left to go back to work. Of course, it was just going to be her, the kids, and my uncle, you know, aunt and uncle, and She sold the farm within 2 weeks.
Really?
And moved into, oh yeah, moved to Hopkinsville into an apartment complex because she was too afraid to be out there anymore. You got to realize, in their mind, what were these? What were they there for in the first place? And if they didn't get what they wanted, would they be back?
Well,
you know?
Yeah, that's bizarre. We have to take a break. We'll come back. We'll discuss more of the alien legacy, the strange encounter in Kelly Hopkinsville. We'll do that with our guest, Geraldine Stith, right after this.
Attention, true crime lovers. The Hit Reels channel show Copycat Killers is coming to Podcast One with all new episodes. Life imitates art, as the old saying goes, which can sometimes lead to deadly consequences. Copycat Killers tells the stories of people who committed crimes that mimic those that the suspects had seen in films. Be sure to check it out in the brand new feed, True Crime, The Reels Collection. Copycat Killers will join the feed along with Murder Made Me Famous. Check out new episodes of Copycat Killers every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome. It's All Out Monsters Attack here on Beyond the Darkness. I'm Dave Schrader. That's Tim Dennis. Geraldine Sutton Stith, our guest. Geraldine, how exactly are you related to the family? Are you the granddaughter, the daughter of one of these eyewitnesses?
I am both.
Okay.
This was my dad and my grandmother and my aunts and uncles.
All right. And now, were you alive at this time?
No. My mom and dad weren't even together yet. They were both married to their first spouses.
Well, I want to get into that story with, you know, how you get told the story and how they treated it in your kind of family history. But mm-hmm. I know that you said that your grandmother sold the farm within 2 weeks of doing this. How hard is it to sell the Sutton farm that's now, like you said, it's a small town. Everybody knows about the quote unquote alien attack.
Well, it was actually family that bought it.
Okay.
Yeah, it was family that bought it. The kids were scared to death. They were scared to death to live in that house. But, you know, you have no choice when your parents move you in. So, but yeah, it was actually some family that bought it. But she wanted out, so she got out. So that's all that matters.
How long did that house stay in the family then?
I don't think it did very long because, let's see, you want to know how I found out about this story? Because my parents kept this story hid from us.
Well, I'd like to hear it. Yeah, we'll get into that aspect of it, but I'm just kind of curious of you know, the activity and how long the house stayed in the family after this.
Yeah, actually, a distant cousin still owns part of it today.
Okay.
Like I said, it was 20-something acres, so it's been divided up into several plots. And actually, we have good news about that. The plot of it that the craft landed on, my sister and her husband actually bought that here recently.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so we're going to be able to do something with that because I don't know if you know it or not, but we have a festival there every year. The Kelly community has a festival. This will be our 10th year. They were able, because of this festival, they were able to buy a big hunk of land out there, and this big hunk of land actually connects to the land where all this happened at. So with my sister being able to buy that plot where the landing was, she's planning on, of course, we're going to fix where you can go on the site where it landed, and she's planning on building a replica house of the actual, you know, farmhouse. The farmhouse was still sitting there in 1968 or 69 when I first found about this story. The land back then, I guess it was still technically owned by family. And like I said, but today it's just split up into pieces. And like I said, a distant cousin owns a piece. Other people I don't know owns pieces, but now my sister owns a chunk of it that is a big chunk to have, actually, with the landing site on it. So, you know, technically part of it is still in the family.
All right.
Chunks.
Well, that's the orbit. Now, the craft, I mean, we talked about the beings. Talk to me a little bit more about the craft. What did the craft look like?
Billy Ray described it as an oval-shaped object with that was silver with the colors of the rainbow flying behind it. And if you look back and read some of the stories and stuff, you will find out that people actually seen rainbow colors that day of things. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know if the little thing was wandering around all day long looking for a place to land or what, but it's just a strange day that day, August the 21st, all the way around.
All right. So the craft is sighted, the figures are sighted, the law enforcement is contacted, they do a full scan, the local newspapers are contacted. What about the military themselves and the military base? Did they come out to investigate?
Yes.
And what was their overall attitude on this? Did they ever take your family aside and go, you know what, nothing happened here, but let's shut up about this?
Not really. What happened was, of course, they were there that night. It happened. Like three or four officers from Fort Campbell came in. The next morning, they had several come out, and they searched the land, you know, the shoulder-to-shoulder thing where they walk through the grass and searched it all and all that kind of thing. They did do that. It was said by witnesses, it was said that they found something, covered it up really fast, ran it to a truck, threw it in the back of the truck, and the truck took off. Now, what was it? Don't know. Probably won't ever know because nobody's going to come forward and let us know what they found. But something apparently was found. There you go.
Really? Okay, well, that's kind of a new twist on an old tale.
Well, see, a lot of people don't know that. See, I found out some things over the years. After I wrote my first book, people came forward. And I actually found out a few little things, and they're in the second book. And
we have a link to that second book. We have a link actually to both books in our shop, folks. So if you right on today's episode, you'll see the link to the second book. But if you go to our Amazon store at darknessradio.com, click on the store link. It'll take you in and you'll see our Amazon deal. Click that link. It'll take you in and you can find all of the paranormal books we talk about, all of our true crime books. There's also cool paranormal merchandise and games and clothing and all of that collected on our site. So that's always the fastest, easiest way for you to find all the cool items that we're discussing here on the show. So, I want to get into the second book, but the government came out, they swept the area, they found something, threw it in a truck and took off, and that was it. Did they ever give an official report regarding this sighting that you're aware of?
Well, according to the Project Blue Book card that's on this, they just got rid of it. They just wanted to get rid of it. They didn't want no more to do with it. They chalked it up as, this is sad to say, but uneducated hillbillies, and just wanted it gone. And that's what they did.
That's horrible that they just dismissed it with uneducated. Listen, even if you're uneducated and dumber than a brick, you know the difference between a human and a little green man.
Exactly.
Especially when it's 3.5 feet tall. You know the difference between a plane and some kind of strange flying craft.
Exactly. But that's how the government is. They don't want us to know these things. So they figure out ways
government
get rid of it.
I guess so.
You know, that's how they were able to do this one and get rid of it.
Well, was your family, you know, the stupid hillbillies, were they ever afraid that that might happen to them, that the government might vanish them for coming forward with this story?
No, I don't think so.
Tongue in cheek, folks. You don't have to send me hate mail. She knows I'm joking around, but that's the whole point.
yeah, their biggest fright was the things coming back. You know, they weren't afraid of the military or anything like that, I don't believe. They were just afraid of whatever those were coming back. And that was the reason to sell the farm and get away. Safety in numbers, my grandmother said, by moving to an apartment complex.
Sure. You know. Makes sense. All right. Now, stayed in the family for a while. Was there ever another encounter on that property that you're aware of?
Not that we know of. And I do believe if there had been, they probably wouldn't have come forward and said anything. They probably wouldn't have been too afraid to, but I don't think there was. I really don't. Why those little beings picked Kelly, Kentucky to land in that night. Don't know.
Do you know, through doing searches and information, were there any other reports within days of anything like that anywhere else close by?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
You know, there's been tales of things over the years, you know, but not that close to that year or even the next, as far as I know.
Well, all right. Now, walk me through your story. How old were you when you finally heard the tale of the little green men?
I believe I was like 8 years old. And what happened was, I'll never forget this. It was a Sunday afternoon. My mom and dad were in the back of the house with the baby. And me and my other little brothers and sisters were up front watching cartoons on the black and white TV. And there was a knock at the door. I answered it. There's this nicely dressed man and woman standing there. Asked to talk to my dad, so I ran to the back of the house and told them there's somebody up here wanting to talk to you. So mom and dad come up front, and the guy says, you know, Mr. Sutton, we want to talk to you about the green men. It's like, ooh, you know, even me, being 8 years old, I love to read. I loved weird stuff, even that early in life. And so I guess my parents thought, well, I guess they need to know this. So they set us down in a circle, and my mom and dad sat down there, and my dad started telling this fantastic story. Well, by the time he was done, this little 8-year-old girl that loved to hear the scary stuff was scared to death. From that time on, I'd go around closing all the windows at night, shades, curtains, doors. I don't care what it was, because I was afraid them things is going to come back and going to look in at us.
Now, was this your dad, correct, that was one of the eyewitnesses
yes.
to this? Okay.
Yes.
Talk
this is my
to me,
dad.
If you would, your father's recollections of this. How old was he at the time this took place?
He was 25.
25. He was mm-hmm. married, yes. And he was there on site during all of this.
Yes.
Did he waffle at all in his story and the explanation to you of, you know, all those years later to retell it? Was there any aspect of it where he even started to try to convince himself that maybe these were people or children or something? What was your take on that?
He wholeheartedly believed this was something from somewhere else. It scared him to death. That's why he didn't like talking about it. He didn't want to talk about it. Most of the time, if he were contacted, he would just tell him, no, I'm not going to do it. That day, I guess he was just stuck because here they were at the door. And we hadn't heard about it because, like I said, they didn't talk about this. This was something that was hush-hush. Nobody talked about it.
Opened up to tell you about
this.
That.
So he took us to Kelly. The house was still standing. Of course, it was falling apart. They had actually moved in a trailer that was sitting in front of it. He took us back in the field. Lo and behold, and this is several years later, the ground still had a brown spot on it that nothing grew in.
Really?
Perfectly big, round circle.
Now, that's the part of the property that your sister owns?
Yes.
Has anybody ever tested that, and has anything grown on that spot as of this point?
It is today. It didn't for a very long time. But no, see, you got to realize, after this happened, and even after family took it over, there were still people coming, wanting to look, wanting to trace the land, you know, all this stuff. You know, when people are knocking on your door in the middle of the night in a stupor, you know, wanting to come out and look where the green men were, you know, you get to the point where you hate people, I guess you could say. And the people that own the land today even have cameras and stuff up because they just got tired of it. They don't let anybody on their land where the house was. I mean, you just don't do that, and you don't bother them because you will get shot. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. With my sister getting this parcel of land, this is going to be a wonderful thing for the Kelly Festival every year.
Have you talked to her about possibly testing that ground and have somebody come out and do a test?
Yes.
If there's anything?
Yes. We're going to, as soon as the weather clears up and it stops raining and stuff where we can get out there, we're going to, because I've got a map, and we're going to figure out exactly where this spot is. We can probably figure it out. Of course, it's grown up. The person that owned this parcel of the land didn't do nothing with it. He just let it grow. So they're going to have to get in there and figure out where it's at, do some clearing, you know, even to put their place on and everything, you know, to clear it off. But the plan is to get back in there because I know about where it's at, and just get back there and figure out where it is.
Now, talk to me about being taken to that property and being shown around. What was it like? You said your father was uncomfortable about this, but how was he during the telling of the story and actually walking you through? Was it very matter of fact, like, you know, oh, this is where I used to swing on my swings. This is where we used to go fishing. Oh, this is where the alien landed. Or, you know, just give us some of that insight.
Well, when he was telling a story, you could tell it bothered him. He just about went pale. You could tell it bothered him. When we went that day to look, he was very quiet. I mean, it was like drove a car by the house, drove it back into the back of the field where it landed, and it was like we got out, we looked, and he was just, okay, this is where it happened. You know, very quiet about the whole thing. You know, look at it. Okay, you've seen it. Let's go. You know, it wasn't no hang around, and this is where I used to have my dog house, or, you know, this is where we used to play over. No, it wasn't nothing like that.
Why do you think it was so important for him to take you there?
We left.
Yeah, why do you think it's so important for him to take you there? I mean, he could have just told you the story, but not revisit. Do you think it was important for him to revisit that as well?
You know, I never really thought about it, but maybe it was. I mean, we knew the story now, and so I guess he figured we know the story, they might as well see where it happened, you know, and so that's what we did.
Do you think that he was, do you think that it was cathartic for him to visit that spot again? And to see
it may have been. It may have been. It may have, in a way, soothed him to a point to see, you know, maybe, okay, it did happen, but it hasn't happened since. Maybe it'll never happen again. I don't know. I just know he just didn't talk about it. He hated it. He did. He actually hated this story. He hated it that it happened to his family. He hated what it did to his family because my Uncle JC, he had a hard time keeping a job after that. The kids, you know, to this day, the three kids are still alive. My older uncle, he used to talk about it, but he didn't talk about it anymore. I think it's partly because he's gotten older. You know, he's getting close to 80. And he just can't remember things like he used to. And I think he just doesn't do it anymore. The two smaller ones, it scares them. I remember, see, every year at the festival, I get up and tell a story. And I remember one year when my Aunt Mary was there, I did it differently. I try to do it a little different every year. And one year I did it as a children's story. I wrote it out like a children's story, like a bedtime story. I thought that would be cute. So anyway, here I had it all written out, and I read it. you know, it was a story, just in a different way. And after it was over with me, Aunt Mary came up to me, because she usually doesn't listen to me tell a story, and I've noticed that. But that year she came to hear the story. She came up to me, and she was like, yeah, pale. She told me, she said, "Oh, my gosh," she said, "you up there telling that made me relive the whole thing again." She says, it scared me to death. I'm like, "Oh, gosh, well, I didn't mean to do that. You know, I didn't want to do that to my aunt." But she said it did. It said it just brought it all back again, because the two younger children have tried to forget this whole thing. They just don't want to remember it. And her listening that year brought it back to her. And so I'm like, "Oh, my goodness," you know. But it's scary. This is a frightening story. It's like I try to say when I do my speaker sessions, this is a great American horror story. You have an innocent family that went through something horrifying that can't be explained, that we don't know really what they were, whether they be paranormal, whether they be extraterrestrial. Something happened to this family that night. You know?
Right. And it is terrifying, because you've got, and I don't want it to sound, you know, like we're in any way diminishing this, but I mean, you've got an experience that really nobody else in the world has had to that level.
Exactly. And it did happen to an innocent family. They had no clue
right. What
these were, what was going on, what was happening to them. They didn't. And that's one reason it is such a wonderful story and people love it. It's because it did happen to an innocent family. And, you know, it's such a great story. And that's one reason I'm trying to keep it alive, because, you know, I've read the stuff. I'll be honest with you. I've stayed away from this thing because it scared me. I mean, even to this day, if we're out at night traveling, I keep my eyes on the sky. 'Cause it's scary. And until like 2005 is when I finally embraced this thing and found out that the story's not being told right. Things are written that aren't right or true or real. And I thought, no, this got to be fixed. And so that's when I jumped in and wrote the first book.
All right.
Because I want people to know the truth.
Yeah. What is the false narrative? What are some of the things that have been told that just are not true?
Well, like there was 11 or 12 of them. There wasn't. And a lot of them, they've got my dad's name wrong. I've read where Billy Ray got abducted. Billy Ray didn't get abducted. You know, just crazy little things like that aren't real, that aren't true, that aren't fact. You know, it's just stuff that people have thrown in there to make it more exciting. I think even Steven Spielberg, he wrote somewhere where they supposed to have jumped on the cows and rode the cows. Well, that didn't happen.
Yeah, but that's a much cooler story. I got to be honest. Spielberg knows his stuff.
Well, that's true. That's where he got E.T. from. So, you know.
Okay, so now you've kind of separated fact from fiction. You've, you know, the things that people have talked about that were just not true, that have become part of the legend and lore. Now, you said that much like the fact that the government had shown up and seemed to have found something that they threw into the back of a truck and took off with, you've uncovered some other unusual truths regarding the story because people have slowly come forward. How do you discern if they've come forward with a real story or if they're just blowing smoke?
Well, you have to kind of try to, you know, think, okay, is this person the real deal or not? And for the most part, you hope they are. You know, especially when people come forward and they were military and they've been hush-hush all this time. they've not, you know, been allowed to say anything, but yet, you know, hey, I'm getting old, I'm fixing to die, you know, this needs to come out. So, you know, you kind of, you have to choose your battle, I guess you could say, and just hope that what you're doing is true and right, and it'll be okay when you do put it on paper.
Well, what were some of the other weird stories that finally came to your attention that, you know, from people you believed and their validity?
Well, like some of the stories, some people have come forward with things they believe that it could have been that night.
Okay, what are some of the best theories?
Like this one. This guy wrote me, and we've written back and forth, and I kind of took what he said with a grain of salt, because you have to think, okay, back when this happened, a friend of his, and they were young boys, maybe 13, 14 years old, I think, and supposedly this boy got a camera and was able to make up his own film and went out there in the woods, get this, and took cords, electrical cords, and strung them from one. And now you got to remember, this is 1955 Kelly. The farms were few and far between. You know what I'm saying? For one, this is one thing that makes this story unreal. And so anyway, he supposedly took all these electrical cords, hooked it up to this camera, and made his own film and made his own little men and was filming them around the farm, and that's how it was happening. He was putting them from one place to the other. Really?
Yeah, that complete a kid doing that. Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, and supposedly came to school the next day bragging about it to his friend, and so his friend contacted me about it, and he believed it wholeheartedly. He said, this guy is the real deal. He wouldn't lie, you know, and all this stuff. Okay, you got to put two and two together with this. For one, you can't string a bunch of electrical cords from a farm that's probably a mile down the road. When they start shooting, you're going to be in the line of fire. When the search crew come out there, they would have found, because he wouldn't have had no time to, I wouldn't think, to get up everything, because he'd be peeing his pants trying to get away from there from getting shot. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, that's kind of like, oh, okay. Okay, but you know.
Here's the thing, though. You would think if a kid had done that, why didn't the authorities, local law authorities, arrest the kid for trespassing and, you know, terrorizing a family? I mean, that's still, he was breaking the law.
Right. But they didn't find nothing out there. That's why.
Really? Okay. All right. Well, I guess you're right.
Why? You know, and the kid was telling his best friend at school, you know, okay, whatever, you know, no way. You know, that's just one of them, you know. Like I said, there's more, but you know, they make fun stories to tell.
Let's examine some of the other parts of the story now. You get this tale. You're sharing it. How does your family feel about you continuing this, if it's something that they've for so long tried to bury?
Well, my dad passed away in 95, so I couldn't ask him. I told my mom. She was all good with it. She didn't care. As far as any of my brothers and sisters, they didn't care. As long as they didn't have to be involved with it, they didn't care. I'm the one that stepped up and did it, you know, but the others, they're like, oh, okay, whatever. And as far as my aunts and uncles, they don't care. They don't want to be involved in it. I mean, because they don't want to be laughed at again. You know, they don't want to be thrown in on it, you know, as far as doing anything with it. You know, they just be in the background of it. But yeah, I mean, everybody's good with it as far as I know.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's, you know, at least you're not irritating the family.
No, what, and everybody's been, you know, getting so old now, they just don't care anymore, I guess.
What has been the response of, I know you said that some, you know, one person came up with this theory that it was this kid, you know, rigging all of this equipment up to do something that an adult couldn't have gotten away with. But were there any other aspects that you, you know, any other stories you heard that you're like, you know, now that is interesting. That might make sense.
Well, there was another one. I had some more people come forward. Actually, I was at a speaker session, and they waited till after everybody left and came up to me and said they needed to talk to me. And I'm like, all righty, what's up? And they told me that they knew a military friend that was at Fort Campbell back then and said at the time they were manipulating some kind of stuff. I forget what the stuff. It's in the book. And manipulating it into forms, and they were able to form this little being, and they were needing to practice and use it, and so they chose Kelly to do this with, and just so happens that it was on my family's farm they chose to do this with. Okay.
Did they give any reason of why they picked that specific property?
And that's kind of weird, too, because at the time, Fort Campbell, okay, it had plenty of, it wasn't as populated either. You know, they could have found a farm out there closer. You know, why? Because there's lots of farmland out there now, but back then it would have been even more. So why did they pick? Well, I guess they needed a family, for one. They needed bodies, but still they could have found bodies out there. But, that, you know, it's like, okay. Thank you for your story. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it makes a great story for a book. So
crazy. Totally bizarre. All right, let's, you know, in kind of retrospect now, you've heard these stories, you've seen what your family had to deal with, how terrifying it was for them. Is this something that, I'm just curious, would you ever want to have an encounter?
No. Mm-mm. No. I have had ufologists tell me that. With you being a descendant of a family that encounters something like this, you have a good chance of being visited too. I'm like, no, they stay away from me. I want nothing to do with them, you know. And you got to think, 1955 to now, they're more technologically advanced, I would say, just like we are. So no, just no, I don't want nothing to do with them. Just stay away.
Mm-mm. No interest in any of that. Well, that's, you know, that's fascinating. I mean, some people are so excited about the opportunity, but yet you're out there, you're moving and shaking, and you're looking into these beings and kind of keeping the light on with the festivals. How many people do you get to come out for the festival every year?
Oh gosh. It's still small. I would say 4,000 to 5,000 right now. Of course, the year of the eclipse, Lots and lots. The eclipse was a fantastic year, but and that was such a funny year too, because the day of the eclipse was the actual day of the encounter, so people were actually scared because we were able to see the eclipse out there in Kelly. It was like for a long time. I forgot, over 2 minutes, and people were actually coming up to me like 2-3 years before the eclipse was even, you know, come. And they were telling me they're going to stay in their house that day. They're not coming out because they're afraid the aliens are going to come back during the eclipse because it's on the same day as the encounter. It was really funny. And people were. They were actually scared. Actually afraid that they were going to come back during the eclipse. So it's like when the eclipse hit, okay, here we are, 11 acres of ground on this festival, and it is packed, I'm telling you, packed with people. And I'm thinking, wow, would it be something if they did come when the eclipse was happening?
Fascinating story. I thank you so much for carrying on and sharing your family's tale. August 21st, 1955. Just another hot summer night like so many others in the small community of Kelly, Kentucky. But Lucky Sutton, along with his family and friends, were enjoying a quiet, peaceful night when literally all hell broke loose. The book is available, Alien Legacy, and the sequel, the Kelly Greenman Alien Legacy Revisited, with even more information. We have links to those on today's program information. So subscribe, check it out, get those books for yourself through our store, and we'll have them there for you. Thank you, Geraldine, so much for coming on and sharing your tale with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I hope you like the story.
We did. Happy New Year to you and your family, and keep your eyes to the skies.
All right. Thank you. You too.
Thank you. All right. That's it for this week, kids. We'll be back Tuesday, another brand new edition of True Crime Tuesday. We got a hell of a story to share with you, so you're going to want to make sure to tune in for that. We'll be back with you next Saturday and Sunday with even more of the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader. That's Tim Dennis. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Life's messy. We're talking spills, stains, pets, and kids. But with Anabay, you never have to stress about messes again. At washablesofas.com, discover Anabay sofas, the only fully machine washable sofas inside and out, starting at just $699. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly, perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Upgrade your space today. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.